This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
While the Lindsay Clancy trial plays out in Plymouth Superior Court, a different trial is happening on TikTok. The theory is that Patrick Clancy, the father of those three children, is the one who actually killed them. Yesterday, we talked to attorney Eric Faddis about how he could legally go after the folks who are pushing this theory, and I encourage him to. I hope to God he puts some people out of homes, out of lives, out of existence for pushing this one. That's the vengefulness I have in my heart when you're going after someone who is a victim of the absolute unimaginable. And the fact that he went and 3 years later remarried. Woo, 3 years later, he remarried. That's too quick for some people. Some people, it's just fine. I'm sorry he didn't consult TikTok before and go, hey, guys, you know what? I went through hell. I found someone who loves me and supports me and cares about me. But Susan in Ohio, do you think it's too quick? Is this going to make you uncomfortable that I get married? Should he have done that, Susan in Ohio? Should he have checked in with you first? That's the level of absurdity that I'm seeing here. Robin, when you look at these comments and from a human behavior side of things, I mean, it just makes me want to scream. But what the hell is going through people's mind that, number one, they feel that their own inter-dialogue and they're feeling that they should be the ones that are granting permission of what's okay and not okay to someone getting remarried 3 years after a horrific tragedy, that somehow their opinion matters. That, I guess, I don't know. We do this for a living and we express our opinions. I don't think my opinion matters about much of anything. I'm just throwing it out there. But why the fuck do people think they can take that vitriol, that weirdness, that darkness, and assign it to someone who they've never met and this experience that they'll probably never experience and dictate to them how they should live their lives and what's appropriate and not?
So we can take the case aside and take a look at this, because I think they're two separate things, because you brought up a really good point about the laws of human nature and how we as human beings interact with the world around us. And so let's look at it from genetics, evolution, and biology about us as a species. Whether you look at Robert Greene's book, Laws of Human Nature, you read books like Robert Cialdini's book, Influence, what happened is human beings are born with this incessant need to correct others. And what happens is we want to prove our worth and value to the world around us, because when we prove our worth and value, they'll accept us as part of the tribe and we're survivors, and then we'll pass on our genetic coding. Literally, that's the reason why that happens. We ebb and flow the dichotomy between self and others when these things happen. But when we hear or see or experience something that's incongruent with our own beliefs, our own self-impressions of ourselves, our own thoughts and ideas, we have this need to want to correct others to prove that we're right, you're wrong. And when we can suspend our egos, our vanities, and our own insecurities to actually open our ears and get curious about why someone has a different opinion of us, now we're going to enter the world of critical thinking. And this is why us as a species, we are not great critical thinkers when we're emotionally hijacked and our prefrontal cortex is fully flooded with all the adrenaline, because we're filled with rage, retribution, all these emotions. And hence, when you give someone a platform like TikTok, Twitter, X, whatever it is, where there's no reciprocity directed against you, where you feel unsafe for saying things that are incongruent with someone else's thoughts, opinions, behaviors, you feel empowered to say stupid shit. And because there's no accountability for it. In other words, society up until probably the information age really took off in the last couple of years has put guardrails on our behavior, because we're accountable to things we say to others. We have to face them. We have to have a dialogue. We have to have the discussion. We have to be able to defend our points of view. We have to be curious about others. All these things we had as a society for our hundreds of thousands of years of evolution simply can't be erased in the last couple because of technology, because we can hide behind a screen. And so that's where this incessant need to correct and come up with stupid shit, because it doesn't agree with what we think the world should be from our own context. Because all this comes down to, at every human disagreement on this planet, is not about what is. You can't argue that the wind is blowing at 15 miles an hour across this parking lot where I'm at right now. That's just a fact of is. But what that interpretation of our context is, I can say that's a great breeze today, and someone next to me can say this is a horrendous wind we're having. And we keep loving to argue that context because no one talks about what is. And talking about what is and the cause and effect of that, that's where critical thinking happens. And that's not the world of TikTok, Twitter, and social media, because we just keep wanting to argue context and get away from facts, data, and law.
Have we always been in a state like this with society? We're just seeing it more now. That's what I kind of go back to a lot of times is when we talk about cases like this, or, you know, sometimes we see a lot of one-off cases that don't get the massive attention like something like this does. And you go, oh my God, the world is filled with madness and horrible people. But, I mean, go to the microfilm at a library. You know what that is? That's where you, for kids, you yes. can go and you can look at old newspapers, and it's probably still on a film. That's how they would store them. Some of it is digitized now, and there probably will be more digitized, but go back and look at old headlines and newspapers from all over the country, and you'll see horrible behavior everywhere. This is not anything new. We're just able to pull it up a hell of a lot more readily than we used to. Are we doing are we the same thing as people, though? Has there always been, you know, Susie in Ohio who's going to have these insane thoughts about Patrick Clancy, or, you know, or whatever, insert person here, having very off-base thoughts about or refusal to understand mental health and just want to put a brick wall up and go, I don't care what happened. I don't care what the details are. She should burn.
Yes.
We've always had those. It's just now they all have microphones and now we're able to hear them all that much more readily, which then incesses everyone who hears those things like nails on a chalkboard and then inspires our anger.
Yeah. And we've always done this. This is how we evolved as a species. The thing that allowed us to move beyond the cave is our ability to storytell and gossip. You know, again, I've mentioned the book numerous times. Noah Havari's book, Sapiens, talks about how we evolved as a species to move beyond the cave and feel safe in our environment. And we did so by being able to be collected in more than tribe of 150, which is chimpanzees, where they get limited at, because we have the ability to storytell, weave a tale, and gossip. And we've always done this as a species. It's why we've evolved. It's how we problem solve. But where it's kept tamped down, I should say, is when you have opinions that get so far astray because of context and these arguing contexts, it's never had a place to root before. Because if you have a really belief system, understanding of what that is that is so divergent and different than the group around you in that tribe and society, you're a minority. A very small minority, maybe 1-2%, and that gets snuffed out because you're surrounded by a lot of other groupthink. In other words, there's no voice there's no echo chamber. It's just you by yourself or maybe one or two people, and then you have the larger tribe, the community, the town, the square, whatever it is. But now what's happened with the information age and our ability to do this, this is, matter of fact, we take it to world of terrorism. Terrorist cells exist in this same kind of microcosm, same kind of groupthink, because you had a mullah over in Pakistan or Afghanistan that teaches their thought process. It gets absorbed by this group. And then they would radicalize outside. They'd reach out to people and grab them in. This is how radicalization happened. And this is what we used to do right after 9/11. It's like, wow, they were radicalized. Who were they recruited by and everything? But then what happened, it took that next step. And this is what we're seeing so much more now. Self-radicalization. So say you have a thought or opinion that's different than what we're seeing in facts, data, and details and cases and people covering it on mainstream media and cable news networks or by really good journalistic investigators and all these things. But I have this, I'm feeling it right here. Now I'm going to go look up online to find my people, and I'm going to find them because they're all out there. And then you get self-radicalized into that group and it self-propagates. And then the algorithms inside these Nuttervilles, what do? They love it. And so it self-propagates. And so this 1-2%, maybe 5% of people that believe a certain thing, all of a sudden feel empowered because they think everyone thinks this way. Because what are the algorithms doing? Propagating that and keeping common sense away.
I feel like a lot of people don't even know what to be outraged by, and they're looking to the group to tell them where it's like, and that, I mean, with the Patrick Clancy, I do not understand this argument because there's a lot of misinformation that a lot of these conspiracy theorists are going down. I've heard so many. Well, he got married in 4 months. No, he didn't. It was 3 years, dipshit. And so we're talking a 3 year between the tragedy happening and him getting remarried. And even when you point that out, well, still, that's too quick. What's too quick about 3 years? I don't see a damn thing wrong with it. I don't even, it's not even like on the, like if he did get married in 4 months, I'd be like, yeah, it's a little quick, but you know, but again, at the end of the day, if he's able to find someone that it was supportive and loving and could help him work his way through this mentally and it turned romantic, more fucking power to the man. What do you want him to be, crying in the corner, dying every day? He could easily do that, and he could very easily not be alive for this trial. I don't know that I would have made it all the way to this trial had this happened to me. I don't think a lot of us would be, quite honestly. Yeah. But he did, and he found love, and he started a new family. And somehow people want to attack him for that and find some sort of fault. I'm seeing a lot of inner projection from a lot of people of why they hate men or they hate women or they hate their ex-partner or whatever, because they were screwed over in some way, shape, or form, and somebody found happiness without them. And they want to sit in their corner and go after anybody who does that. It seems to be an MO for a lot of people. And we're seeing it in this case. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around this, but we see people do that in far less dramatic situations of, oh, well, there you go. They're happy, and they just have to constantly find a way to tear somebody else down and bring them to their own level of unhappiness. Is that what's going on in a lot of this case? Is it a lot of people who are already inherently unhappy, already have an issue with a member of the opposite sex or member of an ex, no matter what sex they are, and they're seeing that in this situation? And for some, even though it's not exactly the same, they're somehow seeing someone else finding happiness after a horrific tragedy, and that offends them because they were unable to achieve that themselves. That to me, I know it's a long, drawn out diatribe there, but that to me feels like kind of the heart of the issue that where a lot of people are coming here from with rage towards Patrick, because I don't see where it's founded in any other way.
Yeah, some. I mean, it's when you're dealing with human behavior and what the impetus is for people to take the actions they take, it's never just one thing. It's a broad swath. Because if you have 10 people, there's going to be really 10 different reasons. They can all kind of be rooted in the same thing, and that is our genetics, biology, and our own human behavior based on our own experiences, our life arc, and the things that traumatize us earlier in life. And that's your point here. So say, and it's not going to be everyone. Some people are just outraged that they just want to get them because, like, you know, Bob was saying earlier, that they're just been determined from the beginning. You killed your kids. You should die. You should be locked away forever, and you should die. There's no excuse. And I get it. Absolutely. You know, and again, I'm on the side, lock her away too, because she's going to be locked away because, yeah, she's not safe, man. She's a nutter, you know, she's broken brain, but you can do so with an understanding about what caused it. And in these cases, a lot of these things, to your point, Tony, is that people have a personal experience, or they know someone had a personal experience that affected them. So they had their own wobble, an own deviation. And then we reflect, and then we identify what caused it. And we don't want it to happen again. We don't want it to happen ourselves again. We don't want to have it with friends. Maybe especially if we're wound collectors, if we have a victim mentality, then we're going to really lash out. If we're problem solvers, we might want to try to fix it in others. See how it can be absolutely anyone that does this, because we now have our own context, our own experience from a situation, or we saw it third hand, or we saw it in some people just see it in something like a movie and they think they can do it. And now we're going to project that on others to allow ourselves. And why do people do this? We want to feel important. Because again, what's the driving motivator? Be valued, seen, and appreciated by others. And we think if we can be that one person that's listened to, I can join the tribe of people that say we can fix this, because I think this is the justice that needs to be done. This needs to be done here. And so it fulfills so many things. So if someone is in that much kind of pain, discontentment, or rage going on in their brain, there's not a lot of good big fours going, the serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin going firing in the brain. And so if this is the only thing they're getting through negative energy by projecting as others, they think that's going to solve the things they're not getting in their life. Again, a lot of information in there. A lot of broad swaths. But yes, some of it is definitely caused by that, but not all.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. And it's, I mean, it feels like a lot of it, a lot of people are not necessarily on the side here of let's prevent this from happening again, or let's find solutions, or let's look at what's broken. It feels like it's more so they're on the mode of protecting their own bubble of their understanding of reality. And they don't want that bubble burst, because when you burst that bubble and you have to understand that psychosis is real, it is a thing that happens, that all these conditions are real and that they happen. I guess if you're living in a world where these things don't exist, or you just don't have to absorb them, it's a happier place. I don't know. I don't live in that land. I live in the land of reality, but I know a lot of people don't like that world. And I think sometimes being brought these stories, these cases that other people are living through, it shows them clear as day a contradiction to that bubble of reality. And it's too close to the sun. It's too scary to really absorb this. So the first thing I'm going to do is fight. It's fight or flight. It's not absorb, it's fight or flight. And fight, then, when people are in that mode, when you're fighting, you go to sometimes unreasonable steps, unreasonable lengths to fight. I think that might be where the Patrick lashing out at is coming from here, where it's unreasonable. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. There's plenty of cases where I feel like conspiracy could be an element to the case. This is not one of them.
Yeah, there definitely are. I battled with you on a few of them.
yeah. I mean, exactly. But I don't know. Honest to God, I'm surprised that there's a conspiracy route to this case.
I mean, we covered this last couple of days too. I am and I'm not. I'm only because, again, when you have I think there's a lot of things in here on that conspiracy end of it, because it's easy with anything you want to prove, especially, so too many things in here. So first of all, yes, people are going to battle against their own self-identity, you know, from being challenged. And because a lot of people lock onto their self-identity, their morals, ethics, beliefs, their line of work, their title, position, all these things. And once you have that locked in, if anything challenges that self-identity, we're going to push back hard against it. And say you're a woman's advocate, if anything goes against that, you're going to go against that. Say you're anti this, anything you're going to challenge, you're going to go against that. So that's part of a lot of this. And then when you can cascade on top of that, as we've said with Patrick, everyone deals with trauma in certain ways. Everyone's a different kind of personality. When I see Patrick and Lindsay, their personalities together, to me, it's a yin and yang. It makes a whole, because she's very different than he is. It's what can make a very good, healthy couple. All the data points we see surrounding them says good, healthy couple. But when you see a different affect in the courtroom between how Lindsay responds and he's responding, that might not sit right with you, because they should be united. He says he's united, but in other words, when words are incongruent with our visual cortex, we sometimes feel like something's off. I mean, one of our listeners yesterday, again, everyone's always picking up right wobbles and tremors. A lot of times we're inaccurate in what we're attributing it to. You're picking up on a wobble potentially in him from the words he's saying, that I stood by her side, I'm doing all these things. But when you see not the same emotional affect matching hers, you're like, something's off. Yeah, because it's not exactly the same as hers, who's completely fallen apart in the courtroom. And so that then exasperates it. All these data points keep coming in to say, I need to blame someone and burn someone at that stake for doing this. And I can't. And some of us, you know, some people saying it can't be her. Look at her. Oh, my God, look at her. It must be someone else. Look at him. He's different. Yeah.
It's like she did it. Nobody is arguing that. It's the mindset here that I see. Like, anyone that murders 3 babies is a danger to society and should be removed. Well, anyone that is medicated with that many meds over the course of 3 months is failed by the medical system that many times when they're trying to get help. I mean, is a victim of a system that is fucked with their brain more ways than their brain's already fucked with them themselves. So that's a big problem there. And I guess the thought is, and I think people are failing to see this or accept this, of let's just hope it doesn't happen to you. Let's just hope it doesn't happen to you with the comment there, that you don't have a grandchild, your own child, someone you care about, that their brain does this to them, or that they fall into this sort of state, because by that thinking, you should just off them too. Or would it be different if they sought help for months leading up to this horrible disaster, wrote about it, begged for help? Everything that she did, trying to get the help that she so desperately desired, would you just tell your sister, your daughter, your granddaughter, your whoever, well, fuck her. She asked for all that help, but still she did it, so she's evil. That's the problem here. This is not a woman who sat there and just said, screw it, she's begging for help. It's so well documented, and so many people fail to understand or even absorb that point and understand it and go, oh, well, she knew something was wrong. She wanted help. She was begging for it, and this is how it happened. By putting up the wall and saying, screw it, burn her, we are saying screw you to every other person out there who falls into a mental illness or falls victim to the being prescribed incorrectly the cocktail of shit she was. And we're saying screw you. Screw you. No matter, though, that you tried to get that help, screw you. This happened over here. We don't want to hear about it. Screw them and screw you if it happens to you, too. That's what you're saying when someone, not you, Robin, but that's what the person is saying when they're like, fuck it, we don't want to hear anymore.
And on top of all that, to me, it still comes down to even simpler. She is. That's what I just don't think enough people understand. This isn't about her getting off.
No.
This is just where she's going to spend the rest of her life, in a psychiatric ward or in general pop. Either way, she is behind bars no matter what happens. That's the bottom line, because you're right. I agree. She should not be out in general population interacting with people right now. That is a very, very broken brain. Yeah. And look at all I keep saying to people, get curious. Research it. It's all out there. Research exactly what state hospital she would be in, what the conditions are there, and what's going to happen to her, how often she's evaluated, and the likelihood and probability she will ever, ever get out of jail. It's like this, if ever. And so that's what I'm saying is, like, I am not an advocate for letting her go. None of us are. It's not what the argument here is. The argument is that mental health failed, recognized in a psychosis because of all these failings. And as because they failed, she went into a psychotic break. Again, we'll find out when the jury decides, because that's who really matters in this one. And obviously advocating for the children, the loss of life, and fixing a system so it doesn't happen again. This is not about freeing Lindsay. She's not. I don't want her freed. She doesn't want to be. She wants to be dead. So that's why I really wish people would focus on that. Fix the effing system that completely failed the person who is doing her utmost to keep it going, to solve her problems. She was applying her same. I mean, again, the prosecution outlined it. This is a type A, hard charging mom of three, labor and delivery nurse that was trying to desperately. And if you listen to her testimony, listen to her journals, all she wanted to do in life was be a mom, maybe even having a bigger family. And as she was facing her mental health crisis, she was applying that type A to solve the problem. She did not give up on a problem. She was trying to work the problem the best she could. And it failed. The system failed her. And she's accountable to it. She will be accountable to it no matter what the jury decides on this. And she will spend the rest of her life behind bars. Oh, my God. So I don't understand why there's an argument on this. It just
or in a mental hospital. I mean, I don't know.
It's behind bars. It's behind bars.
Well, it's because protecting someone's own bubble from reality supersedes getting out in front of this and trying to understand it and prevent it from happening to other people. It's I don't know. That seems to be the way a lot of brains operate. And why we are not that far off from 1693 today. We're just calling it something different. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Until next time, for Bob, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.